Too late, Angwell remembered why she avoided the slaughterhouse district at this time of the month. She could change at will at any time. That's what people forget about werewolves, but they remembered the important thing. Full moonlight was the irresistible trigger. The lunar rays reached down into the center of her morphic memory and flipped all the switches, whether she wanted them switched or not. Full moon was only a couple of days away, and the delicious smell of the penned animals and the blood from the slaughterhouse was chiming against her strict vegetarianism. The clash was bringing on her PLT. She glared at the shadowy building in front of her. I think we'll go around the back, she said. And you can knock. Me? They won't take any notice of me, said Cheery. You show them your badge and tell them you're the watch. They'll ignore me. They'll laugh at me. You're going to have to do it sooner or later. Go on. The door was opened by a stout man in a bloody apron. He was shocked to have his belt grabbed by one dwarf hand, while another dwarf hand was thrust in front of his face, holding a badge, and a dwarf voice in the region of his navel said, "We're the watch, right? Oh, yes. And if you don't let us in, we'll have your guts for starters." "Good try," murmured Angwa. She lifted Cherry out of the way and smiled brightly at the butcher. "Mr. Sock? We'd like to speak to the employee of your, to an employee of yours, Mr. Dorful." The man hadn't quite got over Cheery, but he managed to rally. "Mr. Dorful, what's he done now? We'd just like to talk to him. May we come in?" Mr. Sock looked at Cheery, who was trembling with nerves and excitement. "I have a choice," he said.
"Let's say you have a kind of choice," said Angwa.
She tried to close her nostrils against the beguiling miasma of blood. There was even a sausage factory on the premises. It used all the bits of animals no one would ever otherwise eat, or even recognize. The odors of the abattoir churned her human stomach, but deep inside, part of her sat up and drooled and begged at the mingling smells of pork and beef and lamb and mutton and rat, she said, sniffing. "I didn't know you supplied the dwarf market, Mr. Sock." Mr. Sock was suddenly a man who wished to be seen to be cooperative. "Dwarful, come here right now." There was the sound of footsteps, and a figure emerged from behind a rack of beef carcasses. Some people had a thing about the undead. Angwa knew Commander Vimes was uneasy in their presence, although he was getting better at it these days. People always needed someone to feel superior to. The living hated the undead, and the undead loathed. She felt her fists clench. The unalive. The golem, called Dwarful, lurched a little because one leg was slightly shorter than the other. It didn't wear any clothes because there was nothing whatsoever to conceal. And so she could see the modeling on it where fresh clay had been added over the years. There was so much patching that she wondered how old it could be. Originally, some attempt had been made to depict human musculature, but the repairs had nearly obscured these. The thing looked like the kind of pots Igneous despised, the ones made by people who thought that because it was handmade, it was supposed to look as if it was handmade, and the thumbprints baked in the clay were a sign of integrity. That was it. The thing looked handmade. Of course, over the years, it had mostly made itself, one repair at a time. Its triangular eyes glowed faintly. There were no pupils, just the dark red glow of a banked fire. It was holding a long, heavy cleaver. Cheery's stare gravitated to this and remained fixed on it in terrified fascination. The other hand grasped a piece of string, on the end of which was a large, hairy, and very smelly goat. "What are you doing, Dorful?" The golem nodded toward the goat. "Feeding the Yudas goat." Dorful nodded again. Have you got something to do, Mr. Sock?" said Angua. "No, I've..." "You have got something to do, Mr. Sock," said Angua emphatically. Yes, okay. I'll just go and see to the offal boilers." As the butcher walked away, he stopped to wave a finger under the place where Dorful's nose would be if the golem had a nose. "If you've been causing trouble," he began. "I expect those boilers could really do with attention," said Angua sharply. He hurried off. There was a silence in the yard, although the sound of the city drifted in over the walls. From the other side of the slaughterhouse, there was the occasional bleat of a worried sheep. Dorful stood stock still, holding his cleaver and looking down at the ground. "Is it a troll made to look like a human?" whispered Cheery. "Look at those eyes." "It's not a troll," said Angua. "It's a golem, a man of clay. It's a machine." "It looks like a human." "That's because it's a machine made for looking like a human." She walked around behind the thing. "I'm going to read your chem, Dorful," she said. The golem let go of the goat and raised the cleaver and brought it down sharply on a chopping block beside Cheery, making the dwarf leap sideways. Then it pulled around a slate that was slung over its shoulder on a piece of string, unhooked the pencil, and wrote, "Yes." When Angua put her hand up, Cheery realized that there was a thin line across the golem's forehead. To her horror, the entire top of the head flipped up. Angua, quite unperturbed, reached inside. Her hand came out holding a yellowing scroll. The golem froze. The eyes faded. Angua unrolled the paper. "Some kind of holy writing," she said. "It always is. Some old dead religion." "You've killed it." "No. You can't take away what isn't there." She put the scroll back and closed the head with a click. The golem came alive again, the glow returning to its eyes. Cheery had been holding her breath. It came out in a rush. "What did you do?" she managed. "Tell her, Dorful," said Angua. The golem's thick fingers were a blur as the pencil scratched across the slate. "I am a golem. I was made of clay. My life is the words, my means of words of purpose in my head. I acquire life. My life is to work. I obey all commands. I take no rest." "What words of purpose?" "Relevant texts that are the focus of belief. Golem must work. Golem must have a master." The goat lay down beside the golem and started to chew cud. "There have been two murders," said Angua. "I'm pretty certain a golem did one, and probably both. Can you tell us anything, Dorful?" "Sorry, look," said Cheery. "You're telling me this thing is powered by words. I mean, is it telling me it's powered by words? Why not? Words do have power. Everyone knows that," said Angua. "There are more golems around than you might think. They're out of fashion now. But they last. They can work underwater or in total darkness or knee-deep in poison for years. They don't need rest or feeding. But that's slavery," said Cheery. "Of course it isn't. You might as well enslave a doorknob. Have you got anything to tell me, Dorful?" Cheery kept looking at the cleaver in the block. Words like length and heavy and sharp were filling her head more snugly than any words could have filled the clay skull of the golem. Dorful said nothing. "How long have you been working here, Dorful?" "Now 300 days already." "And you have time off?" "To make a hollow laughing. What would I do with time off? I mean, you're not always in the slaughterhouse. Sometimes I make deliveries. And meet other golems?" "Now listen, Dorful. I know you things keep in touch somehow. And if a golem is killing real people, I wouldn't give a busted teacup for your chances. Folks will be along here straight away with flaming torches and sledgehammers. You get my drift? The golem shrugged. They cannot take away what does not exist, it wrote. Angua threw up her hands. I'm trying to be civilized, she said. I could confiscate you right now. The charge would be being obstructive when it's been a long day, and I've had enough. Do you know Father Tubalchuk? The old priest who lives on the bridge? How come you know him? I have made deliveries there. He's been murdered. Where were you when he was killed? In the slaughterhouse. How do you know? Dorval hesitated a moment. Then the next words were written very slowly, as if they had come from a long way away, after a great deal of thought. Because it is something that must have happened not long ago. Because you are excited. For the last 3 days, I have been working here. All this time? Yes. 24 hours a day? Yes. Men and trolls here on every shift. They will tell you. During the day, I must slaughter, dress, quarter, joint, and bone. And at night, without rest, I must make sausages and boil up the livers, hearts, tripes, kidneys, and chitterlings. Chitterling. That's awful, said Cheery. The pencil blurred briefly. Close. Dorful turned his head slowly to look at Angela and wrote, Do you need me further? If we do, we know where to find you. I'm sorry about the old man. Good. Come on, Cheery. They felt the golem's eyes on them as they left the yard. It was lying, said Cheery. Why do you say that? It looked as if it was lying. You're probably right, said Angua. But you can see the size of the place. I bet we wouldn't be able to prove it had stepped out for half an hour. I think I'll suggest that we put it under what Commander Vimes calls special surveillance. What, like plain clothes? Something like that, said Angua carefully. Funny to see a pet goat in a slaughterhouse, I thought, said Cheery, as they walked on through the fog. What? Oh, you mean the Eudes goat? Said Angua. Most slaughterhouses have one. It's not a pet. I suppose you could call it an employee. Employee? What kind of job could it possibly do? Huh. Walk into the slaughterhouse every day. That's its job. Look, you've got a pen full of frightened animals, right? And we're going to skip the rest of this part. I suppose it makes sense from the goat's point of view. At least it does walk out, said Angua. How did you know about this? Oh, you pick up all sorts of odds and ends of stuff in the watch. I've got a lot to learn. I can see, said Cheery. I never thought you had to carry bits of blanket for a start. It's special equipment if you're dealing with the undead. Well, I knew about garlic and vampires. Anything holy works on vampires. What else works on werewolves? Sorry, said Angua, who was still thinking about the golem. I've got a silver mail vest, which I promised my family I'd wear. But is anything else good for werewolves? A gin and tonic's always welcome, said Angua distantly. Angua? Hmm? Yes? What? Someone told me there was a werewolf in the watch. I can't believe that. Angua stopped and stared her down at her. I mean, sooner or later the wolf comes through, said Cheery. I'm surprised Commander Vimes allows it. There is a werewolf in the watch, yes, said Angua. I knew there was something odd about Constable Visit. Angua's jaw dropped. He always looks hungry, said Cheery. And he's got that odd smile all the time. I know a werewolf when I see one. He does look a bit hungry, that's true, said Angua. She couldn't think of anything else to say. Well, I'm going to be keeping my distance. Fine, said Angua. Angua, yes? Why do you wear your badge on a collar around your neck? What? Oh, well, so it's always handy. You know, in any circumstances. Do I need to do that? I shouldn't think so. Mr. Sock jumped. Dorful, you damn stupid lump. Never sneak up behind a man on the bacon slicer. I've told you that before. Try to make some noise when you move, damn you. The golem held up its slate, which said, Tonight I cannot work. What's this? The bacon slicer never asks for time off. It is a holy day. Sock looked at the red eyes. Old Fishbone had said something about this, hadn't he? When he'd sold Dorful, Something about sometimes it'll go off for a few hours because it's a holy day. It's the words in its head. If it doesn't go and trot off to its temple or whatever it is, the words will stop working. Don't ask me why. There's no point in stopping it. $530 the thing was had cost, and he thought it was a bargain, and it was a bargain, no doubt about that. The damn thing only ever stopped working when it had run out of things to do. Sometimes not even then, according to the stories. He heard about golems flooding out houses because no one told them to stop carrying water from the well, or washing the dishes until the plates were thin as paper. Stupid things, but useful if you kept your eyes on them. And yet, he could see why no one seemed to keep them for long. It was the way the damn two-handed engine just stood there, taking it all in and putting it where, and never complaining. It never complained or groused. A man could get worried about a bargain like that, and feel mightily relieved when he was writing out a receipt for the new owner. Seems to me there's been a lot of holy days lately, Sock said. Sometimes are more holy than others. But they couldn't skive off, could they? Work was what a golem did. I don't know how we're going to manage, Sock began. It is a holy day. Oh, all right. You can have time off tomorrow. Tonight, holy day starts at sunset. Be back quick then, said Sock weakly. Or I'll... You be back quite quickly, do you hear? There was another thing. You couldn't threaten the creatures. You certainly couldn't withhold their pay, because they didn't get any. You couldn't frighten them. Fishbone had said that a weaver over Naphill Way had ordered his golem to smash itself to bits with a hammer. And it had. Yes, I hear. In a way... It didn't matter who they were. In fact, their anonymity was part of the whole business. They thought themselves part of the march of history, the tide of progress, and the wave of the future. They were men who felt that the time had come. Regimes can survive barbarian hordes, crazed terrorists, and hooded secret societies. But they're in real trouble when prosperous and anonymous men sit around a big table and think thoughts like this. One said, at least it's clean this way, no blood. And it would be for the good of the city, of course. They nodded gravely. No one needed to say what was good for them was good for Ankh Morpork. And he won't die? Apparently, he can be kept merely unwell. The dose can be varied, I'm told. Good. I'd rather have him unwell than dead. I wouldn't trust veterinary to stay in a grave. I've heard that he once said he preferred to be cremated, as a matter of fact. I just hope they scatter the ashes really widely, that's all. What about the watch? What about it?
Lord Veterinary opened his eyes. Against all rationality, his hair ached. He concentrated in a blur by the bed, focused into the shape of Samuel Vimes.
Ah, Vimes, he said weakly. How are you feeling, sir?
Truly dreadful. Who was that little man with the incredibly bandy legs?
That was Donut Jimmy, sir. He used to be a jockey on a very fat horse.
A racehorse, apparently, sir.
A fat racehorse.
Surely that could never win a race.
I don't believe it ever did, sir.
But Jimmy made a lot of money by not winning races.
Ah, he gave me milk and some sort of sticky potion. Veterinary concentrated. I was heartily sick. So I understand, sir.
Funny phrase, that. Heartily sick.
I wonder why it's a cliche.
Sounds jolly.
Rather cheerful, really.
Yes, sir.
Feel like I've got a bad dose of flu, Vimes. Head not working properly.
Really, sir. The patrician thought for a while. There was obviously something else on his mind.
Why did he still smell of horses, Vimes? He said at last.
He's a horse doctor, sir. A damn good one. I heard last month he treated a dire fortune, and it didn't fall over until the last furlong. Doesn't sound helpful, Vimes. Oh, I don't know, sir. The horse had dropped dead coming up to the starting line. I see. Well, well, well. What a nasty, suspicious mind you have, Vimes. Thank you, sir. The patrician raised himself on his elbows. Should toenails throb, Vimes? Couldn't say, sir. Now, I think I should like to read for a while. Life goes on, eh? Vimes went to the window. There was a nightmarish figure crouched on the edge of the balcony outside. Staring into the thickening fog. Everything all right, Constable Downspout? F-fur, said the apparition. I'll shut the window now. The fog is coming in. Fight you are, fur. Vimes closed the window, trapping a few tendrils, which gradually faded away. What was that? Said the Lord Veterinary. Constable Downspout's a gargoyle, sir. He's no good on parade and bloody useless on the street. But when it comes to staying in one place, sir, you can't beat him. He's world champion at not moving. If you want the winner of the 100 meters standing still, that's him. He spent 3 days on a roof in the rain when we caught the Park Lane Nobbler. Nothing will get past him. And there's Corporal Gimletson patrolling the corridor, and Constable Glaude's nephew on the floor below, and Constables Flint and Moraine in the rooms on either side of you. And Sergeant Detritus will be around constantly, so that if anyone nods off, he'll kick arse, sir. And he'll know when he does that, because the poor bugger'll come right through the wall. Well done, Vimes. Am I right in thinking that all my guards are non-human? They all seem to be dwarfs and trolls. Safest way, sir. You've thought of everything, Vimes. Hope so, sir. Thank you, Vimes. Veterinary sat up and took a mass of papers off the bedside table. And now, don't let me detain you. Vimes' mouth dropped open. Veterinary looked up. Was there anything else, Commander? Well, I suppose not, sir. I suppose I'd just better run along, eh? If you wouldn't mind. And I'm sure a lot of paperwork has accumulated in my office. So if you'd send someone to fetch it, I would be obliged. Vimes shut the door behind him, a little harder than necessary. Gods, it made him livid. The way the veterinary turned him on and off like a switch, and had as much natural gratitude as an alligator. The patrician relied on Vimes doing his job, knew he'd do his job, and that was the extent of his thought on the matter. Well, one day Vimes would bloody well do his job, of course, because he didn't know how to do anything else. But realizing that made it all the worse. Outside the palace, the fog was thick and yellow. Vimes nodded to the guards on the door and looked out at the clinging, swirling clouds. It was almost a straight line to the watchhouse in Sidopolis Yard, and the fog had brought early night to the city. Not many people were on the streets. They stayed indoors, barring the windows against the damp shreds that seemed to leak in everywhere. Yes, empty streets. A chilly night, dampness in the air. Only one thing was needed to make it perfect. He sent the sedan man on home and walked back to one of the guards. You're Constable Lucker, aren't you? Yes, sir, Sir Samuel. What size boots do you take? Lucky looked panicky. What, sir? It's a simple question, man. 7.5, sir. From old Plugger and new cobblers? The cheap ones? Yes, sir. Can't have a man guarding the palace in cardboard boots, said Vimes, with mock cheerfulness. Off with them, Constable. You can have mine. They've still got Wyvern. Well, whatever it is Wyverns do on them. But they'll fit you. You don't stand there with your mouth open. Give me your boots, man. You can keep mine, Vimes added. I've got lots. The constable watched as in frightened astonishment as Vimes pulled on the cheap pair and stood upright, stamping a few times with his eyes shut. Ah, he said, I'm in front of the palace, right? Yes, sir. You just come out of it, sir. It's this big building here. Ah, said Vimes rightly. But I'd know I was here even if I hadn't, or... It's the flagstone, said Vimes. They're an unusual size and slightly dished in the middle. Hadn't you noticed? Your feet, lad. That's what you'll have to learn to think with. The bemused constable watched him disappear into the fog, stamping happily. Corporal, the Right Honorable, the Earl of Onknobby-Nobs, pushed open the watch-house door and staggered inside. Sergeant Cullen looked up from his desk and gasped. You okay, Nobby? He said, hurrying around to support the swaying figure. It's terrible, Fred, terrible. Here, take a seat. You're all pale. I've been elevated, Fred, moaned Nobby. Nasty. Did you see who did it? Nobby wordlessly handed him the scroll Dragon King of Arms had pressed into his hand and flopped back. He took a tiny length of homemade cigarette from behind his ear and lit it with a shaking hand. I dunno, I'm sure, he said. You do your best, you keep your head down, and you don't make any trouble, and then something like this happens to you. Cullen read the scroll slowly, his lips moving when he came to the difficult words like and the. Nobby, you've read this. It says you're a lord. The old man said they'd have to do a lot of checking up, but he thought it was pretty clear, what with the ring and all. Fred, what am I going to do? Sit back and eat off ermine plates, I should think. That's just it, Fred. There's no money. No big house, no land. Just not a brass farthing. What, nothing? Not a dried pea, Fred. I thought all the upper crust had pots of money. Well... I'm the crust on its uppers, Fred. I don't know anything about lording. I don't want to have to wear posh clothes and go to hunt balls and all that stuff. Sergeant Cullen sat down beside him. You never suspected you got any posh connections? Well, my cousin Vincent once got done for indecently assaulting the Duchess of Quorum's housemaid. The chambermaid or scullery maid? Scullery maid, I think. Probably doesn't count, then. Does anyone else know about this? Well, she did. And she went and told... I mean about your lordshiping. Only Mr. Vimes. Well, there you are, said Sergeant Cullen, handing him back the scroll. You don't have to tell anyone. Then you don't have to go around wearing golden trousers, and you needn't hunt balls unless you've lost them. You just sit there, and I'll fetch you a cup of tea. How about that? We'll see through... See it through, don't you worry. You're tough, Fred. That makes two of us, my lord. Cullen wagged his eyebrows. Get it? Get it? Don't, Fred. The watch house door opened. Fog poured in like smoke. In the midst of it were two red eyes. The parting shreds revealed the massive figure of a golem. Umpk, said Sergeant Cullen. The golem held up his slate. I have come to you. Yeah. I can see that, said Cullen. Dorful turned the slate around. The other side read, I give myself up for murder. It was I who killed the old priest. The crime is solved. Cullen, once his lips had stopped moving, scurried behind the suddenly very flimsy defenses of his desk and scrabbled through the papers there. You keep it covered, Nobby, he said. Make sure it don't run off. Why is it going to run off, said Nobby. Sergeant Cullen found a relatively clean piece of paper. Well, I guess I better... What's your name? The golem wrote, Dorful. By the time he was on the brass bridge, medium-sized cobbles of the rounded sort they called cat heads, quite a few missing. Vimes was already beginning to wonder if he'd done the right thing. Autumn fogs were always thick, but he'd never known it this bad. The pall muffled the sounds of the city and turned the brightest lights into dim glows, even though, in theory, the sun hadn't set yet. He walked along by the parapet. A squat, glistening shape loomed in the fog. It was one of the wooden hippos, some distant ancestor of Roderick or Keith. There were four on either side, all looking out towards the sea. Vimes had walked past them thousands of times. They were old friends. He'd often stood in the lee of one on chilly nights when he was looking for somewhere out of trouble. That's what it used to be like, wasn't it? It hardly seemed that long ago. Just a handful of them in the watch, staying out of trouble. And then Carrot had arrived, and suddenly the narrow circuit of their lives had opened up. And there were nearly 30 men. Oh, including the trolls and dwarfs and miscellaneous. In the watch now. And they didn't skulk around keeping out of trouble. They went looking for trouble. And they found it everywhere. Everywhere they looked. Funny, that. As Veterinary had pointed out in that way of his, the more policemen you had, the more crimes seemed to be committed. But the watch was back and out there on the streets, and if they weren't all actually as good as detritus at kicking arse, they were definitely prodding buttock. He lit a match on a hippo's toenail and cupped his hand around it to shield his cigar from the damp. These murders, now. No one would care if the watch didn't care. Two old men, murdered on the same day. Nothing stolen, he corrected himself. Nothing apparently stolen. Of course, the thing about things that were stolen was that the bloody things weren't there. They almost certainly hadn't been fooling around with other people's wives. They probably couldn't remember what fooling around was. One spent his time among old religious books. The other, for God's sake, was an authority on the aggressive uses of baking. People would probably say they had lived blameless lives. But Vimes was a policeman. No one lived a completely blameless life. It might be just possible, by lying very still in a cellar somewhere, to get through a day without committing a crime. But only just. And even then, you were probably guilty of loitering. Anyway, Angua seemed to have taken this case personally. She always had a soft spot for the underdog. So did Vimes. You had to. Not because they were pure or noble, because they weren't. You had to be on the side of the underdogs, because they weren't overdogs. Everyone in the city looked after themselves. That's what the guilds were for. People banded together against other people. The guild looked after you from the cradle to the grave, or, in the case of the assassins, to other people's graves. They even maintained the law, or at least they had done after a fashion. Thieving without a license was punishable by death for the first offense. The Thieves Guild saw to that. The arrangement sounded unreal, but it worked. It worked like a machine. That was fine, except for the occasional people who got caught in the wheels. The damp cobbles felt reassuringly real under his soles. Gods, he'd missed this. He'd patrolled alone in the old days, when there was just him, and the stones glistened around 3 a.m. It still seemed to make sense, somehow. He stopped. Around him, the world became a crystal of horror. The special horror that has nothing to do with fangs or ichor or ghosts, but has everything to do with the familiar becoming unfamiliar. Something fundamental was wrong. He took a few dreadful seconds for his mind to supply the details of what his subconscious had noticed. There had been 5 statues along the parapet on this side, but there should have been 4. He turned very slowly and walked back to the last one. It was a hippo, all right. So was the next one. There was graffiti on it. Nothing supernatural had. Zaz is a wonker. Scrawled on it. It seemed to him that it didn't take quite so long to get to the next one, and when he looked at it, 2 red points of light flared in the fog above him. Something big and dark leapt down, knocked him to the ground, and disappeared into the gloom. Vimes struggled to his feet, shook his head, and set off after it. No thought was involved. It is in the ancient instinct of terriers and policemen to chase anything that runs away. As he ran, he felt automatically for his bell, which would summon other watchmen. But the commander of the watch didn't carry a bell. Commanders of the watch were on their own. In Vimes' squalid office, Captain Kara stared at a piece of paper. Repairs to guttering, watch house, Pseudopolis Yard, new downpipe, 35 degrees, Micklewhite, send. Four right angled trusses, labor and making good, 1635. There were more like them, including Constable Downspout's Pigeon Bill. He knew Sergeant Colin objected to the idea of a policeman being paid in pigeons, but Constable Downspout was a gargoyle, and gargoyles had no concept of money. But they knew a pigeon when they ate it. Still, things were improving. When Carrot had arrived, the entire watch's petty cash had been kept on a shelf in a tin marked Strong in the Arms Armor Polish for Gleaming Cohorts. And if money was needed for anything, all you had to do was go and find Nobby and force him to give it back. Then there was the letter from a resident in Park Lane, one of the most select addresses in the city. Commander Vimes, the night watch patrol on this street appears to be made up entirely of dwarfs. I have nothing against dwarfs amongst other their own kind, at least they are not trolls. But one hears stories, and I have daughters in the house. I demand that the situation is remedied instantly. Otherwise, I shall have no option but to take up the matter with Lord Veterinary, who is a personal friend. I am, sir. Your obedient... I am, sir. Your obedient service. J.H. Catterill. This was police work, was it? He wondered if Mr. Vimes was trying to tell him something. There were other letters. The community coordinator of Equal Heights for Dwarfs was demanding that dwarfs in the watch be allowed to carry an axe rather than the traditional sword, and should be sent to investigate only those crimes committed by tall people. The Thieves Guild was complaining that Commander Vimes had said publicly that most thefts were committed by thieves. You'd need the wisdom of King Isaiah Dono to tackle them, and these were only today's letters. He picked up the next one and read, "Translation of text found in Father Tubalcheck's mouth. Why? S.V." Carrot dutifully read the translation. "In his mouth. Someone tried to put words in his mouth," said Carrot to the silent room. He shivered, but not because of that cold that came from fear. Vimes's office was always cold. Vimes was an outdoors person. Fog was dancing in the open window, little fingers of it drifting in the light. The next paper down the heap was a copy of Cheery's iconograph. Carrot stared at the two blurred red eyes. "Captain Carrot?" He half turned his head, but kept looking at the picture. "Yes, Fred?" "We've got the murderer. We've got him. Is he a golem?" "How did you know that?" The tincture of night began to suffuse the soup of the afternoon. Lord Veterinary considered the sentence and found it good. He liked tincture particularly. Tincture. Tincture. It was a distinguished word, and pleasantly countered by the flatness of soup. The soup of the afternoon, yes. In which may well be found the croutons of tea time. He was aware that he was a little lightheaded. He'd never have thought a sentence like that in a normal frame of mind. In the fog outside, the window just visible by the candlelight, he saw the crouching shape Constable Downspout. A gargoyle, eh? He'd wondered why the watch was indebted for 5 pigeons a week on its wages bill. A gargoyle on the watch, whose job it was to watch. That would be Captain Carrot's idea. Lord Veterinary got up carefully from the bed and closed the shutters. He walked uneasily to his writing table, pulled his journal out of its drawer, then tugged out a wad of a manuscript and unstopped the ink bottle. Now then, where had he got to? Chapter 8, he read unsteadily. The Rights of Man. Ah, yes. Concerning truth, he wrote, that which may be spoken as events dictate, but should be heard on every occasion. He wondered how he could work soup of the afternoon into the treatise, or at least tincture of night. The pencil scratched across the paper. Unheeded on the floor lay the tray that had contained a bowl of nourishing gruel, concerning which he had resolved to have strong words with the cook when he felt better. It had been tasted by 3 tasters, including Sergeant Detritus, who was unlikely to be poisoned by anything that worked on humans, but probably not by most things that worked on trolls. The door was locked. Occasionally, he could hear the reassuring creak of Detritus on his rounds. Outside the window, the fog condensed on Constable Downspout. The veterinary dipped the pen in the ink and started a new page. Every so often, he consulted the leather-bound journal, licking his fingers delicately to turn the thin pages. Tendrils of fog slipped in around the shutters and brushed against the wall until they were frightened away by the candlelight. Vimes pounded through the fog after the fleeing figure. It wasn't quite so fast as him. Despite the twinges in his legs and 1 or 2 warning stabs from his left knee. But whenever he came close to it, some muffled pedestrian got in the way, or a cart pulled out of a cross street. His soles told him that they'd gone right down Broadway and had turned left into none such street. Small square, paving stones. The fog was even thicker here, trapped between the trees of the park. But Vimes was triumphant. You've missed your turning if you're heading for the shades, my lad. There is only the Ankh Bridge now, and there'll be a guard on that. His feet told him something else. They said, what leaves? That's Nonsuch Street in the autumn. Small square paving stones with occasional treacherous drifts of wet leaves. They said it too late. Vimes landed on his chin in the gutter. Staggered upright, fell over again as the rest of the universe spun past. Got up, tottered a few steps in the wrong direction, fell over again, and decided to accept the majority vote for a while. Dorful was standing quietly in the station office, heavy arms folded across its chest. In front of the golem was the crossbow belonging to Sergeant Detritus, which had been converted from an ancient siege weapon.
It fired a 6-foot-long iron arrow.
Nobby sat behind it, his finger on the trigger. Put it away, Nobby. You can't fire that in here, said Carrot. You know we never find where the arrows stop. We wrestled a confession out of it, said Sergeant Colin, hopping up and down. It kept on admitting it, but we got it to confess in the end. And we've got these other crimes we'd like taken into consideration. Dorful held up his slate. I am guilty. Something fell out of its hand. It was short and white, a piece of matchstick by the look of it. Carrot picked it up and stared at it. Then he looked at the list Cullen had drawn up. It was quite long and consisted of every unsolved crime in the city for the past couple of months. Has confessed to all of these? Not yet, said Nobby. We haven't read them all out yet, said Colin. Dorful wrote, I did everything. Hey, said Colin, Mr. Vimes is going to be really pleased with us. Carrot walked up to the golem. There was a faint orange glow in its eyes. Did you kill Father Tubalchuk? He said, yes. See, said Sergeant Colin, you can't argue with that. Why did you do it? No reply. And Mr. Hopkinson at the Bread Museum? Yes. Beat him to death with an iron bar, said Carrot. Yes. Hang on, said Colin. I thought you said he was leave it, Fred, said Carrot. Why did you kill the old man, Dorful? No reply. Does there have to be a reason? You can't trust golems. My dad always used to say, said Colin, turn on you soon as you as look at you, he said. Have you ever killed anyone, said Carrot. Not for want of thinking about it, said Colton darkly. My dad said
He had to work with one once, and it used to look at him all the time. He'd turn around, and there it would be, looking at him. Dorful sat staring straight in front of him. Shine a candle in its eyes, said Nobby. Carrot pulled a chair across the floor and straddled it. Facing Dorful, he absentmindedly twirled the broken match around between his fingers. I know you didn't kill Mr. Hopkinson, said it. And I don't think you killed Father Tubalchuk, he said. I think he was dying when you found him. I think you tried to save him, Dorful. In fact, I'm pretty sure I can prove it if I can see your cap. The light from the golem's flaring eyes filled the room. He stepped forward, fists upraised. Nobby fired the crossbow. Dorful snatched the longbow out of the air. There was the sound of screaming metal, and the bolt became a thin bar of red-hot iron with a bulge piled up around the golem's grip. But Carrot was behind the golem, flipped open its head as the golem turned, raising the iron bar like a club. The fire died in its eyes. Got it, said Carrot, holding up a yellowed scroll. At the end of Nonsuch Street was a gibbet where wrongdoers, or at least people found guilty of wrongdoing, had been hung to twist gently in the wind. Examples of just retribution, and as the elements took their toll, basic anatomy as well. Once parties of children were brought there by their parents to learn by dreadful example of the snares and perils that await the criminal, the outlaw, and those who happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And they would see the terrible wreckage creaking on its chain and listen to the stern imprecations, and then usually, this being Ankh-Morpork, would say, "Wow, brilliant," and use the corpse as a swing. These days, the city had more private and efficient ways of dealing with those that found surplus to requirements. But for the sake of tradition, the gibbet's incumbent was a quite realistic wooden body. The occasional stupid raven would have a peck on at the eyeballs even now, and end up with a much shorter beak. Vimes tottered up to it, fighting for breath. The quarry could have gone anywhere by now. Such daylight as had been filtering through the fog had given up. Vimes stood beside the gibbet, which creaked. It had been built to creak. What's the good of a public display of retribution? It had been argued, if it didn't creak ominously. In richer times, an elderly man had been employed to operate the creak by means of a length of string. But now there was a clockwork mechanism that needed to be wound up only once a month. Condensation dripped off the artificial corpse. "Pull this for a lark," muttered Vimes, and tried to head back the way he came. After 10 seconds of blundering, he tripped over something. It was a wooden corpse, hurled into the gutter. When he got back to the gibbet, the empty chain was swinging gently, jingling in the fog. Sergeant Cullen tapped the golem's chest. It went donk. "Like a flower pot," said Nobby. "How can they move around when they're like a pot, eh? They don't ought to keep cracking all the time." "They're daft, too," said Cullen. "I heard there was one over in Quorum who was made to dig a trench, and they forgot about it, and they only remembered it when there was all this water, because it had dug all the way to the river." Kara unrolled the kim on the table and laid beside it the paper that had been put in Father Tubalchuk's mouth. "Is it dead?" "It's dead, is it?" said Sergeant Cullen. "It's harmless," said Kara, looking from one piece of paper to the other. "Right. I've got a sledgehammer around the back somewhere. I'll just..." "No," said Kara. "You saw the way it was acting. I don't think it could actually have hit me. I think it just wanted to scare us." "It worked. Look at these, Fred." Sergeant Cullen glanced at the desk. "Foreign writing," he said, in a voice which suggested that it was nothing like as good as decent home writing, and probably smelled of garlic. "Anything strike you about them?" "Well, they look the same," Sergeant Cullen conceded.
This yellowing one is Dorfelskim. The other one is from Father Tubalchuk, said Carrot. Letter for letter the same. Why is that? I think Dorfel wrote these words and put them in old Tubalchuk's mouth after the poor man died, said Carrot slowly, still looking from one piece of paper to the other. Yuck, said Nobby. That's mucky, that is. No, you don't understand, said Carrot. I mean, he wrote them because they were the only ones he knew that worked. Worked how? Well, you know the kiss of life, said Carrot? I mean first aid. I know you know, Nobby. You came with me when they had that course at the YMPA. I only went because you said that you got a free cup of tea and a biscuit, said Nobby sulkily. Anyway, the dummy ran away when it was my turn. It's the same with life-saving, too, said Carrot. We want people to breathe, so we try to make sure they've got some air in them. They all turned back to look at the words. But golems don't breathe, said Colin. No, a golem knows only one thing that keeps you alive, said Carrot. It's the words in your head. They all turned to look at the statue that was Dorfel. It's gone all cold in here, Nobby quavered. I definitely felt a aura flickering in the air just then. It was like someone... What's going on? Said Fimes, shaking the damp off his cloak. Opening the door, said Nobby. It was 10 minutes later. Sergeant Colin and Nobby had gone off duty to everyone's relief. Colin, in particular, had great difficulty with the idea that you went on investigating after someone had confessed. It outraged his training and experience. You got a confession, and there it ended. You didn't go around disbelieving people. You disbelieved people only when they said they were innocent. Only guilty people were trustworthy. Anything else struck at the whole basis of policing. White clay, said Carrot. It was white clay we found, and practically unbaked. Dorfel's made of dark terracotta and rock hard. The last thing the old priest saw was a golem, said Vimes. Dorfel, I'm sure, said Carrot. But that's not the same as saying Dorfel was the murderer. I think it turned up as the man was dying, that's all. Oh, why? I'm not sure yet, but I've seen Dorfel around. It's always seemed a very gentle person. It works in a slaughterhouse. Maybe that's not a bad place for a gentle person to work, sir, said Carrot. Anyway, I've checked up all the records, and I can find that I don't think a golem has ever attacked anyone, or committed any kind of crime. Oh, come on, said Vimes. Everyone knows. He stopped as his cynical ears heard the incredulous voice. What? Never? Oh, people are always saying that they know someone who had a friend whose grandfather heard of one killing someone. And that's about as real as it gets, sir. Golems aren't allowed to hurt people. It's in their words. They give me the willies. I know that, said Vimes. They give everyone the willies, sir. You hear lots of stories about them doing stupid things, like making 1,000 teapots or digging a hole 5 miles deep, said Vimes. Yes, but that's not exactly criminal activity, is it, sir? That's just ordinary rebellion. What do you mean, rebellion? Dumbly obeying orders, sir. You know, someone shouts at it, go and make teapots, so it does. Can't be blamed for obeying orders, sir. No one told them how many. No one wants them to think, so they get their own back by not thinking. They rebel by working? It's just a thought, sir. It'd make more sense to a golem, I expect. Automatically, they all turned again to look at the silent shape of the golem. Can it hear us, said Vimes? I don't think so, sir. This business with the words, or I think they think a dead human is just someone who's lost his kin. I don't think they understand how we work, sir. Them and me both, Captain. Vimes stared at the hollow eyes. The top of Dorfel's head was still open so that light shone down through the sockets. Vimes said Vimes had seen many horrible things on the street, but the silent golem was somehow worse. You could too easily imagine the eyes flaring and the thing standing up and striding forward, fists flailing like sledgehammers. It was more than just his imagination. It seemed to be built into the things, a potentially biding its time. That's why we all hate him, he thought. Those expressionless eyes watch us. Those big faces turn to follow us. And doesn't it look as if they're making notes and taking names? If you heard that one had bashed in someone's head over in Quorum or somewhere, wouldn't you just love to believe it? A voice inside, a voice which generally came to him only in the quiet hours of the night, or in the old days, halfway down a whiskey bottle, added, given how we use them, maybe we're scared because we know we deserve it. No, there's nothing behind those eyes. There's just clay and magic words. Vimes shrugged. I chased a golem earlier, he said. It was standing on the brass bridge. Damn thing. Look, we've got a confession and the eyeball evidence. If you can't come up with anything better than a feeling, then we'll have to... To what, sir, said Kara. There isn't anything more we could do to it. It's dead now. Inanimate, you mean? Yes, sir. If you want to put it that way. If Dorfel didn't kill the old man, who did? Don't know, sir, but I think Dorfel does. Maybe it was following the murderer. Could it have been ordered to protect someone? Maybe, sir. Or it decided to. You'll be telling me it's got emotions next. Where's Angle gone? She thought she'd check a few things, sir, said Kara. I was puzzled about this, sir. It was in his hands. He held the object up. A piece of matchstick? Golems don't smoke, and they don't use fire, sir. It's just odd that it should have that thing. Have the thing, sir. Oh, said Vimes sarcastically. A clue.